Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, a hung jury in the case of Bill Cosby. His defense team is claiming victory, but the prosecution is vowing to retry the case. We will have reaction from a reporter who covered it from the very beginning. Also, not guilty, folks. That was a decision in the Philando Castile case in Minneapolis. That officer, Dronel Yanez, not guilty. We'll talk with the woman who actually streamed the death of Philando Castile, as well as a Black Lives Matter pastor, getting their reaction to what took place there. Over the weekend, it was Father's Day, and Jay-Z had a special gift for men locked up. They actually provided funds for them to be bailed out of jail. We'll talk about that with our panel as well. It's also Juneteenth today. Of course, the only day recognizing the freeing of slaves in America. Also, speaking of issue of slavery and civil rights, the bipartisan U.S. Civil Rights Commission voted unanimously to launch a two-year probe into the Trump administration's proposed cuts in civil rights offices across the federal government, saying they have grave concerns about its commitment to civil rights. Plus, my conversation with Jeff Friday, the chairman of the American Black Film Festival that we were at this weekend in Miami. Plus, it is World Sickle Cell Awareness Day. We'll talk with officials from St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis about what they're doing to finding a cure for the disease that affects black children and adults. Folks, it's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One.
Say something in the words of Huey P. Newton. Power is the ability to define phenomenon, making it act in a designed manner. Power is the ability to define phenomenon and make it act in a designed manner. Mr. Cosby, power is back. It's back. It has been restored. The jurors, they use their power to speak. And Mrs. Cosby, power is back. So the legacy didn't go anywhere. It has been restored. And for all those attorneys who conspired like Gloria Allred, tell them to go back to law school and take another class. Thank you.
Well, that was Bill Cosby's spokesman, Andrew Wyatt, claiming victory after a suburban Philadelphia judge declared a mistrial in the comedian's sexual assault case that took place on Saturday. Jurors deliberated for more than 50 hours but could not come to a decision as it relates to the guilt or innocence of Bill Cosby. Now, while Cosby didn't say anything after the decision, his wife Camille blasted prosecutors, the judge, and the media. This was the statement read outside of court.
How do I describe the district attorney? Heinously and exploitively ambitious. How do I describe the judge? Overtly arrogant and collaborating with the district attorney. How do I describe the counsels for the accusers? Totally unethical. How do I describe many, but not all, general media? Blatantly vicious entities that continually disseminated intentional omissions of truths for the primary purpose of greedily selling sensationalism at the expense of a human life. Historically, people have challenged injustices. I am grateful to any of the jurors who tenaciously fought to review the evidence, which is the rightful way to make a sound decision. Ultimately, that is a manifestation of justice based on facts, not lies. As a very special friend once stated, truth can be subdued, but not destroyed. Moreover, I express humongous gratitude to counselors Brian McMonagle and Angela Agrusa for their hard work. Mr. McMonagle for his passionate and powerful articulations of truth. Ms. Agrusa for her thorough research to bolster Counsel McMonagle. To Mr. Andrew Wyatt for his unequivocal skills in public relations. To our team who worked diligently and intelligently. To our staffs for their continuous commitment to our family and me. And to our children, grandchildren, and other family who loves us. And to our dear friends and supporters who never gave up on us despite it all. Camille Cosby.
Andrea Constant, the woman who accused Bill Cosby, she said, quote, these proceedings have given a voice to the many victims who felt powerless and silenced. Prosecutor Kevin Steele says he will try Bill Cosby again. The judge indicated it will happen within the next 4 months.
We will evaluate and review our case. We will take a hard look at everything involved, and then we will retry it. As I said in court, our plan is to move this case forward as soon as possible.
Now, Cosby remains free on bail. He remains charged with 3 counts of aggravated indecent assault stemming from the 2014 incident. Constant says the entertainer drugged and assaulted her at his home. He claims the encounter was consensual. Joining me via Skype from Dallas, Yodit Tewell Day, criminal defense attorney and legal analyst. So, Yodit, first of all, is it a good idea for Bill Cosby's legal team, his spokesman? No, I take that back. Not his legal team, but his spokesman and even his wife to blast the judge, blast the prosecutor, when he very well could be retried again.
Well, we know he is going to be retried again, and no, it's not a smart thing. This rep for Cosby has, I think, come off incredibly cocky. So it's sort of ironic that Camille Cosby is blasting the judge as cocky when the representative for Cosby has come out so arrogant in this entire proceeding. However, it's ironic that she's saying, Camille, that is saying that the judge is arrogant and siding with the prosecution when really the judge favored the defense by not allowing the 13 other accusers to testify in Cosby's trial. I think that was a win for the defense. So they have to keep in mind that they will be retried and they're going to have to pick another 12 jurors who are watching and listening to all of these things. And so it may be a little harder this time to find 12 jurors who are going to set aside what they've heard and have seen from Cosby's rep and has heard from Camille Cosby's statement.
The other issue is we don't know how this jury was hung. Right. We don't know if it was 10-2 for acquittal, 10-2 for conviction. So the Cosby team is claiming this major victory, but it's not.
And a mistrial is neither a conviction nor is it an acquittal, which is why the prosecution can get another crack at Cosby. So for them to claim victory and not really know, now they may actually know the divide. We don't know. They may know. I don't know. But it is not an acquittal. He's going to be retried and they don't know. They may actually get a conviction with these new 12 jurors. So for them to sit here and say that it is a victory. Now, again, this may be a spin. This may be something that they are doing intentionally so that whatever future potential prospective jurors may see this as, you know what? Maybe Cosby really didn't do it. Maybe he is being vindicated. And so we don't know what the reason is, and it's gonna be pretty interesting to see how this is going to affect the trial moving forward.
Vincent Thompson with WURD Radio in Philadelphia. You covered this from the beginning. You've been joining us here on TV One. It was very interesting just watching how all of this played out on Saturday. What was it like outside of that courtroom?
Well, it was a lot of disappointment from women who have accused Mr. Cosby of sexually assaulting them. Remember, Andrea Constant is one of 60 women who have accused Mr. Cosby over the years, going back to the 1960s, of drugging and molesting them. At least a third of these women are African-American. Two of those African-American women, the most known being Lily Bernard, she was at the court on Saturday, had been at the court for the last couple of days, and she openly wept when the mistrial was announced. The women had said that they were excited about having the chance to prosecute Cosby again. These women are going to stay on Mr. Cosby, and they're looking for a conviction. Andrea Constand, the reason that Mr. Steele, the district attorney, decided to retry the case is he spoke to Andrea Constand minutes before the jury came back and announced that they were hopelessly deadlocked, and she said that she wanted to go through this trial again. I have to agree with you, Roland. It is not a victory for Mr. Cosby, because 4 months' time from now, there's going to be a brand new jury. We don't know where they're going to be picked from, who are going to hear this case over again, and Mr. Cosby could be convicted. So instead of being 79 years old and possibly going to jail, by the time October rolls around, he could be 80 years old and have to go to jail. So, you know, there was a lot of playing to the court of public opinion both sides.
I want to pull in our panel here, Chris Metzger, legal scholar, political scientist, president and CEO for JMI Group, Law Victoria Burt, political analyst and writer for NBC Black, Eugene Craig, CEO of Eugene Craig Organization. The Cosby folks can claim partial victory in that it's a mistrial. But again, to go after the judge, the same judge who will still be on this case,
yeah.
Chris, I don't think, and remember, here's what you didn't see. You didn't see his lawyers out there talking.
Right. No, what you saw were supposedly spin doctors having this conversation. They sounded cocky, incompetent, ignorant. And again, from a strategic standpoint, as a former prosecutor myself, if you're going to go after the judge that's going to retry your case, good luck with that. It's not going to work out well.
Yeah, I think that presentation afterwards was a example of the fact that Mr. Cosby is 79 years old and probably didn't explicitly tell his team to shut up, even though that may have been what he was thinking. And it's fine that they think that, but they can't present that way in public. I actually think this was more of a victory for Mr. Cosby than a defeat. I think it's unlikely that a new case would have a different result, a result of guilty. But, you know, like you were saying, I mean, the whole Andrew Wyatt and I think Camille Cosby, there's no reason to say anything. Just let it play out. 4 months goes by. He probably will be, I would think on a second trial he'd be acquitted. Because I think the likelihood, it's a tough case to begin with. I'm surprised it was a mistrial. I'm surprised this wasn't acquittal. So,
you know, and again, Eugene, we still don't know
the breakdown.
The jury was hung.
We don't know how the jury was hung. If it was, you know, either leaning acquittal or leaning conviction. But, you know, for, you know, his spokesperson got there and just, you know, attack everybody. For Camilla to literally call the media essentially fake news. I mean, these guys are literally running 45's playbook when it comes to handling, you know, major situations, which I don't necessarily recommend for anybody. But I do think that they are probably leaning that, you know, if this case does come back up, which the DA is saying it will, or state's attorney is saying he's going to try it again, they probably will lean towards acquittal, another mistrial, if it actually does end up coming up again.
Their communication strategy has been this from the very beginning.
And
got 49 people out there who are talking and doing things and doing interviews, it's just not a good PR idea to induce them even more with that presentation.
Well, again,
forget the 49 people. You went after the judge. You went after the judge.
Right.
You went after the person that's literally overseeing your case. I mean, it doesn't get any worse than that. That's the equivalent of 45 going after Robert.
And your spokesperson.
Your D, I want to pull you back in here. Again, what also took place was actually while the jury was deliberating, the judge admonishing the defense team because of comments Andrew Wyatt made outside of the courtroom with regards to a woman who's not allowed to testify. That was also, again, weird. The jury didn't hear it because they were sequestered. But to still do that while the jury's deliberating, the judge was not happy.
No, the judge was not happy, and they still did it. And so they're already poisoning a future potential jury that's going to come up. Now, I'm going to have to disagree with one of your panelists that said that they believe that there may be an acquittal the second time around, when honestly, I think that there actually may be a conviction. You have to remember the prosecution now has a detailed view of the defense team's strategy. They know now what to correct. They may bring on more witnesses that weren't as effective this time. They are going to get a narrative from these jurors as to what happened back there in deliberations so that they could tweak their case moving forward. So I'm not really sure that their case going forward will be just the same or even weaker. It actually may be stronger. So it's going to be interesting now to see what these jurors are going to do next. And keep in mind what Cosby was doing while the trial was going on, how his comments, his joking, his smiling, his insensitivity to the entire proceeding is also going to be in the minds of these jurors going forward.
Vincent Thompson, final comment by 20 seconds.
I just think that people should wait for trial number 2, which is going to happen in October.
All right. Vincent Thompson, thanks a lot. Udita Welde, thanks a lot as well. Folks, coming up next on News 1 Now, Philando Castile, the officer who shot and killed him, found not guilty. Protests took place all over the weekend. We'll talk with Diamond Reynolds, Castile's girlfriend, who recorded or live streamed the aftermath of the shooting on Facebook. That is next, News 1 Now on TV One.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks, we're at the Journal of Times, Journal Morning Show in just a few seconds to discuss the Philando Castile case. Of course, that got so much attention over the weekend. And so let's go live to Jonah right now.
Oh, 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 it's the time for the morning.
Rolling, 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 rolling.
From Washington, D.C., Roland Martin, good morning.
Tom Sybil Arsenio, hope all is well. First,
good morning, brother.
First and foremost, all the fathers, a happy Father's Day, even though it was yesterday.
Thank you.
Got to. And let me go ahead and say this before we get to the topic. I really need people to do this here. Can we stop having the negative first and then the positive? People say, we want to thank all the fathers, and then, of course, y'all who ain't taking care of your kids. Don't nobody dog the mamas who ain't doing nothing on Mother's Day. And so can we start with the daddies handling their business and not start with the folks who are not?
It's just
a personal peeve with me, Tom. I'm like, give the brothers their credit on Father's Day and just let them, but thank you very much. Just give them some love. And so also, Tom, today is Juneteenth Day.
Yes, it is.
And Texas was the first state, and it is the only holiday that recognizes the end of slavery in America. And so it's important that we remember this day. Y'all stop making jokes saying Texas found out 2 years late, because Texas still, thanks to former state rep Al Edwards, became the first state to make it a state holiday. So leave Texas alone, damn it. All right.
Your home state.
Yes, my home state. And shout out to my sister Kenya. Yes, my sister Kenya. It's her birthday. All right, let's get right to it, Tom.
All right.
Tom, rough weekend. First of all, Philando Castile case. Folks were just shocked and stunned when a St. Paul jury deliberated for 4 days before finding officer Geronimo Yanez not guilty on all charges in the death of Philando Castile. It was second-degree manslaughter. He also was acquitted of 2 counts of intentional discharge of a firearm that endangers safety. Now, the police department said he is going to be fired for that, but he's likely going to fight that. Many of us were just stunned when we saw the Facebook Live video that was shot by his girlfriend, Diamond Reynolds. Their child was in the back seat, and it was unbelievable. And she joins us right now via phone from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Diamond, good morning.
Diamond,
you there? All right, folks, is Diamond there?
Good morning.
Yes,
you can't hear me.
There she is.
Yes, now, Diamond, there, we got you. Diamond, first and foremost, just your reaction to this jury's decision, where many people were just sure that this officer was going to be found guilty.
It was horrifying hearing the final verdict. I was not aware of what was going to happen. And once we found out that the officer was found not guilty, it was just horrifying. It was devastating. It was just a gruesome experience that I had to go through, a traumatic experience my daughter had to go through, and a horrifying experience that the world had to see for themselves. So for us not to get justice is heartbreaking.
It was also just difficult because, again, very few officers ever found not guilty. He was the first officer in Minnesota history who was tried in the death of someone. And what is still as amazing is that here was a guy who was licensed to carry, and this officer still fired and could have killed you and your daughter.
Absolutely. I just don't see where in the history of mankind that a man a human being could do something so horrifying and not be held accountable. It's just so sad the world we live in today.
I want to play this for you. This was one of the jurors, what he had to say about what took place in that jury room.
Oh, really? Okay, interesting.
Guys, do we have that? Can y'all play it, please? Okay. Can we play it now? Okay, all right. So let me know when we have that. Larry Rogers, you're the attorney for Diamond. So on the civil side, is there anything happening moving forward? Larry Rogers?
Yes, can you hear me, Roland?
Yeah, I can hear you. What's next on the civil side?
They have withheld a lot of the evidence from us pending the criminal trial. Now we've issued our request to get all that information. But what's most amazing about this is we have not only Diamond's videotape of what happened that day, but the dash cam video. And when you see that evidence, Roland, it's really jarring. And it's inconceivable how this jury found this officer's actions to be excusable. There's absolutely no justification for what he did. Philando was doing absolutely the right thing. He went above and beyond when he informed the officer that he had a weapon, and the officer did not take the right steps. He was a scared man with a weapon, and he discharged it at Philando when Philando did absolutely nothing wrong.
There were lots of protests over the weekend. Minneapolis Pastor Danny Givens, folks were out in the streets. Are we going to see more protests, more pressure applied to the prosecution, applied to police, to try to get justice for Philando Castile?
Absolutely.
Diamond, go ahead, and then I'm going to go to Pastor Givens. Diamond, go ahead.
I feel as though the protesting shouldn't stop. The people need to come together. When I went out there to march, there was more white people than black people, and our black people are not supporting us enough. We need to join forces and stand for something, or we're going to constantly keep falling for nothing.
Pastor Danny Givens with Black Lives Matter of Minneapolis.
Yes, thank you for having me on, sir.
Will the protests continue?
Black Lives Matter Minneapolis has definitely been organizing and will continue to put pressure. There's a number of different folks and activists that are on the ground that are organizing and representing. I know Diamond talked about a number of white folks that have been coming out to protest. And the reality is that it's safer for white folks to protest than it is for black folks. Black folks aren't necessarily as confident to protest up here. If you remember the Jamar Clark, when they shot five of our protesters and basically gave Scarcella a slap on the hand for it. So black folks aren't as apt to come out because it's not safe for us to be out.
The mother of Philando Castile was very upset by what took place. Super Dave, I know you have the audio ready. Can you go ahead and play that for us to hear Philando Castile's mother express her outrage?
My son loved this city, and this city killed my son, and the murderer gets away. We have taken steps forward. People have died for us to have these rights, and now we're devolving. We're going back down to 1969. Damn! What is it gonna take? I'm mad as hell right now.
Tom, I can tell you, I was in Miami for the American Black Film Festival, and I was leaving out of Fort Lauderdale, and a police officer, a 23-year veteran, walked up to me. Mm-hmm. This is a cop, Tom. He said, Roland, when in the hell are cops going to go to jail for killing black folks who are wrong? Wow. This was a 23-year cop.
I asked Sean King what's the count, and he said there have been over 1,700 people kill, and so far, zero convictions. Zero. None. Nada.
Larry Rogers, that's what continues to anger people. But this is what I told the officer, Larry, and I hated to say it. I said, until we see a handful of white folks shot and killed by cops, the law will not change.
That's absolutely right. And I think it's important, though, that prosecutors bring these charges. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Real quick.
I think it's important that prosecutors still bring these charges because it is the fear of being held accountable that will stop these officers from committing these type of acts.
I understand.
You still have to bring these.
I understand your point, but it's going to be the fear of actually being convicted that will make that happen. So,
and there's zero convictions.
Zero.
More than 1,700 cases. None.
Diamond Reynolds, thank you for joining us. Larry Rogers, Pastor Danny Gibbons, thanks a lot.
Good work, Roland.
Thanks a lot.
Love you, Roland.
27 past the hour.
Folks, we come
zero
back on.
Zero.
We come back on News One Now. We'll talk about Trump administration basically ignoring civil rights. And the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, they say they're going to launch an investigation into this problem. That's next, News One Now TV.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
The Mother's Day movement to bail out mothers has now moved on to Father's in celebration of Father's Day, Pride Month in Juneteenth, of course, which is today. Many organizations and celebrities, including Jay-Z, raise funds to bail out fathers on Father's Day. Jay-Z, who just became a father of three after his wife gave birth to twins, pointed out in a recent op-ed for Time magazine that 1 in 9 black children have had a parent in jail. The National Bailout Campaign raised money and bailed out fathers all around the country so that dads could spend Father's Day with their children. Organizations are also working to correct the legal system.
In Memphis, what that looks like is we're working with our council people to get legislation and ordinances passed to eliminate bail for misdemeanor acts.
In addition, there's a drive to bail out fathers today for Juneteenth and on June 25th for Pride Bailout Day. Of course, and so again, Juneteenth, as I talked about on Tom Joyner Morning Show, is the only day that recognizes the freeing of slaves in America, of course, which took place on June 19th, 1865. So actually, we're freed earlier, technically, but Texas found out 2 years later when the general made his way to the beach in Galveston, Texas, and made the announcement. And so, of course, so we certainly want to wish all of you a happy Juneteenth on this day. All right, y'all, the investigation into the Trump administration, they keep on coming. Of course, you got Robert Mueller, the special prosecutor, doing his thing, the FBI doing their thing, Congress doing their thing. Now the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights is saying, let's deal with this as well. They're going to begin a 2-year probe into the White House's slashing of budgets and staff in civil rights offices at 7 government agencies, with some cuts as high as 23%. The bipartisan watchdog group was created 60 years ago and is charged with monitoring civil rights enforcement in the federal government and advising the president and Congress on needed changes. Let's talk about it right now, of course, with member of that commission, which is extremely important to the issue of civil rights. Now, of course, they can't force the White House to do something, but they can embarrass them. Joining us right now is Catherine Lehman, chair of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. How you doing?
Thanks very much for having me, Roland.
All right, so here's the thing. So you have AG Jeff Sessions, who comes in and says, look, you know, cops are under so much pressure, and so, you know, it's hurting their morale, so we're going to pull back on consent decrees. They pretty much try to screw the Baltimore consent decree. Now they're trying to renegotiate and throw all the teeth out of the one in Chicago. Now, all of a sudden, the attack on civil rights across federal agencies.
Yes.
And then he told black folks, what the hell do you have to lose? A lot.
Well, we are very, very deeply concerned about all of the signals from this administration about where they are and where they are not with respect to civil rights. The U.S. Commission on Civil Rights voted unanimously to conduct a 2-year investigation into civil rights enforcement across
all
agencies.
Okay, I want to hold you right there. Okay.
Sure.
So to explain to the public, there are members of this commission who are appointed by Republicans and Democrats.
That's correct.
Okay. And so how many members of the commission?
There are 8 members of the commission.
How many are appointed by Democrats?
We are 6 members who are progressive and 2 members who are conservative at the moment.
So the conservatives also voted for this?
That's correct.
So they are also bothered by what they're saying?
There was a unanimous vote that we need to investigate this administration's civil rights enforcement record, and that is a core function of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights and has been for 60 years. So we're taking up that function again and really taking very seriously our concerns.
I have seen nothing from this administration that says they give a damn about civil rights.
I would phrase that slightly differently, but certainly the clearest signals we've seen to date have given us real reason for pause.
Chris Messel, I want to bring you in, Lauren, as Eugene as well. So I got 2 black Republicans here. It's just, again, there's nothing here. There's nothing this administration is showing that it cares about civil rights. And when you not only slash the budgets and you send the signal, look, we're not going to prosecute, we're not going to push any of these issues, anybody should be scared.
What do you mean Omarosa and Jeff Sessions aren't the second coming of Malcolm and Martin? Come on. You know, these guys didn't run on civil rights. They actually ran the exact opposite. You know, like you said, what does Black America have to lose? A hell of a lot. You know, I think Jeff Sessions is the worst AG we've had in probably an entire generation and a half. I think Omarosa Manigault has done tremendous damage to African American community with her lack of engagement when it comes to Black Republicans and the Black community overall. You know, and I think what they're doing with a lot of these civil rights offices and these agencies is it's going to set communities of color, disenfranchised communities back generations, Chris, if it's not addressed.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's time for the commission to take a serious look as to what's going on. I frankly have not seen a civil rights agenda of any kind out of this administration. And, you know, I'm a Republican, and I have not seen this occur at all. So I think it is time, in fact, for the commission to look at this. And of course, there is this big discussion, not with the Civil Rights Commission, but with the EEOC, about the merging of the EEOC and the Department of Labor. The problem is that doesn't work.
But
why they serve different
functions. Why does there need to be an investigation of that? I mean, we can see pretty plainly what they're doing right out in the public. They're not trying to hide what they're doing. Also, that's about right. Omarosa, she's one person. Stephen Miller and Steve Bannon are far more dangerous than Omarosa Manigault.
I will say this.
So the one person in there.
You have walking privileges with the president.
Does she have walking privileges?
She does.
Yeah, okay.
If she does
have walking privileges, she's still one person.
That's true.
And you know that the president of the United States is unhinged.
But when you phrase yourself.
So one person going up against Donald Trump.
One second.
Between Black America and the president of the United States, the responsibility, when you take on that responsibility, as a person, we take on that responsibility yourself. Will you freeze out other people from having that responsibility and that access? It falls on you.
So
that responsibility falls on you.
You expect her to fix all the civil rights in the Trump White House.
I expect her. If she wants to be the black gatekeeper to the White House.
I'm not going to have an Omarosa conversation. I want you to answer your question. And your question was, why does it need to be an investigation?
Well, it is our statutory charge to do the investigative work. And so we need to actually take a look at what the promises are, how the promises are kept, what the management practices look like, and what the budgets look like to be able to report to the American people, yes, this is effective, or no, it is not.
And certainly, this will be a report at the end.
That will be our report at the end.
And folks, I don't think the average person also understands, because look, it's not public, really what these offices do and how they impact, again, folks' lives.
That's right. And I think, frankly, we're focused on the wrong things in the conversation we're having this morning. That there are White House advisors, but there are cabinet secretaries who are appointed to enforce federal civil rights laws who have taken a position that they will not do it, right? And that they are affirmatively opposed to the mission of their agencies. That's scary for us.
Is it a legal violation to not enforce the law? So if you don't enforce the Civil Rights Act, is that a violation of law, not enforcing?
There have been court cases that have ruled that the agencies have to act in the past. And in the Reagan administration, for example, the Department of Education, whose Office for Civil Rights I led until coming to the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, was held under court order actually to act because they hadn't been acting in the past.
Well, I'm looking forward to this. Keep the pressure on. And again, he kept saying, what the hell do you have to lose? And we're going to keep saying a whole lot. And so if they invite me back to the White House again for one of those meetings, I can guarantee y'all, I'm going to look him in his eye and I'm going to say, what the hell are you doing about civil rights?
Thank you.
Because you asked us what the hell you have to lose. So we'll see if I get the third invite. I got two. Let's see if there's a third one. Catherine, let me, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, up next on News One Now, we talked with the chair of the American Black Film Festival, Jeff Friday, about the importance of it when it comes to blacks in cinema. Also, we'll talk about it being World Sickle Cell Awareness Day. What is St. Jude doing to find a cure for sickle cell? All that next, News One Now, TV One.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Last few days, News One Now was in Miami for the American Black Film Festival. There's their 20th anniversary, where they focus, of course, on African Americans in front and behind the camera when it comes to the big screen, the small screen, cable, and now, of course, streaming. We sat down with co-founder Jeff Friday to talk about the future plans of the festival and how it has evolved into such a significant event.
You know, we started in Acapulco, Mexico, which was great at the time because only 90 people showed up. But at some point, we outgrew Acapulco, and we had to get it back to the States. And one of the reasons that we didn't stay there is we were doing great work. Halle Berry, John Singleton, Spike, and those guys were there in the early days, Morgan Freeman.
So it was sort of a film festival, but also...
It was a retreat.
You can retreat, you can come hang out, chill, relax.
Yeah, but the problem with the retreat concept is if the industry doesn't take it seriously, then it goes away. And so we came here, we came to Miami in 2002. Went from 500 people to 5,000. Now we're at 10,000 people. We've got, I think 22 networks in here. All the major studios. We're opening with big films. We opened with Girl Trip the other night. And so, you know, now in order for this to survive, it's really got to be taken serious, just as serious as Sundance and all the other
things. And also in there, because did you also go to New York and then bring it back?
We went to New York for a couple of years. I took to L.A. because I thought being closer to my celebrity friends would be better. You know, everyone told me, man, why are we here? I want to get to South Beach.
Right.
So, you know, this is a great place. I mean, who doesn't love it down here, man?
Well, so, the point there, so we talk about this idea of film festivals. Now, there are a plethora of film festivals. But when you begin to deal with how the industry looks at them, you can say cons. You can say Cannes, whatever the hell they call it. Mm-hmm. Then you say, then you throw in Tribeca.
Yeah.
You still, though, are having to make the case, not just to studios, but also to other media, that don't just blow this off as just a little get together. That they should be looking at this the same way they look at Tribeca.
No different than TV1 and ABC, or Howard and Harvard. They'll always ask us, why do you need a black blank? And the purpose of this is no different than the purpose of HBCUs back in the day. We needed a place where black artists would feel comfortable. I've gone to Sundance 15, 20 times, and I was there the first. In fact, Sundance is the reason I started this, because I went there to see Love Jones in 1997, Nia Long, Lorenz Tate. Everyone remembers the film. And there were five or six black people there, including us. Myself, Neil Lorenz, the director, and a few other people I saw, you know. And I just realized that the industry is broader than that. And it wasn't that they were excluding, but their messaging wasn't as inclusive as it could have been. So you can complain about Sundance and talk about that for the rest of your life, or you can do something about it. So this whole thing was really a result of an experience that I had, and I felt that we needed our own. You know, and so this is great. I mean, and listen, 21 years later, there was a need for it, right? Hundreds of filmmakers have come out of this, and it's not just a retreat. Ryan Coogler is doing Black Panther next year. He was here 5 years ago as a no-name filmmaker who won an HBO Short Film Award.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't feel like we have to justify what we do. You know, and people ask me sometimes, well, what's the breakout movie? And I go, we break out people. Will Packer.
Mm-hmm.
A breakout person who came from here. You know, and a lot of people have come out of, you know, from ABIT.
It's access. I mean, just, you know, I moderated panels at the Pan-African Film Festival. You know, same thing.
Another great thing.
I mean, the reality is there has to be a place, to your point, where if you are an aspiring writer, director, actor, whatever, there has to be a place for you to go where you can touch people. I mean, for me in my career, National Association of Black Journalists,
Amen.
The ability to be able to go to that convention, see people who look like me, learn from, talk to, touch, network with, then that leads to things down the path. Nearly every job that I've had has been a result of the people I met through NABJ.
Same thing, the exact same thing. And it doesn't say you can't go to the other ones, this excludes people outside the black community. What this really works, when people who aren't black come and appreciate what we do and come down and do deals with us and check out our content. So far, so good, man. It's been going great.
But what you've also done with this is, I mean, look, at the end of the day, these things have to make money. It's great to just get together, but at the end of the day, it has to also be strong financially. Yeah. You've also aligned with Butch Brazen Black Enterprise.
Absolutely.
In terms of partnership as well, and then also talk about you expanding and then getting with an agency to represent ABFF.
Sure. Yeah, what drives us is the finance. I mean, HBO came on in our first year as a sponsor, and along the way, TV1's been around 6-7 years now, and many other companies, Cadillac and American Airlines.
but it's about having relationships, it's about good corporate partners. I partnered with Butch and Black Enterprise about a year and a half ago, because one of the things you don't see in our space is black companies doing business together.
Right.
You know, you and I have talked about that a lot, the need for us to start to, you know, to hold hands and the 1+1=3 concept. So it's been great being a part of the Black Enterprise family. And then a year ago, we signed with CAA. And what that did, it opened up the floodgates for us. It really was a watershed moment, because now any meeting that we need to have in Hollywood, it's a quick phone call, and the ABF people need to come and talk to you. So it's really been this kind of like tsunami of goodwill and good fortune, man. The last few years have been great.
So yeah. so you were talking about ABFF, the film festival itself, which lasts four to five days.
Yeah.
So then you created an award show, extended the brand. So how else are you looking to extend the brand, where ABFF is simply not a once a year deal, where all of a sudden you're on top of mind different places, let's say every quarter? Yeah. How are you looking to do that?
Yeah. So about 10 years ago, it hit me that this is a cultural institution. When someone calls you and says, ABFF changed my life, it's no longer just a 4-day event.
Right.
And so I thought about the Apollo Theater and the legacy of Aretha Franklin saying at the Apollo Theater, and I thought about Motown. So I started to compare it to things that we respect, these cultural institutions that won't ever go away. So I like to consider ABFF the Motown Apollo Theater hybrid of the film and TV business, where 50 years from now, there'll be a legacy of artists. Ryan Coogler will be an old man, and he'll say, hey, I got my start at ABFF. And so then we thought about the award show. What else can we do? How can we broaden the footprint of the ABFF? Mm-hmm. And so we launched ABFF Honors a couple of years ago, which aired on television. It was a fantastic show, and that's our Golden Globe. So now we have our film festival where the new people come through, and mm-hmm. now we have our own Golden Globe show with Denzel.
Because you were honoring people here, but folks wouldn't know you honoring them.
But the platform wasn't big
Precisely.
Enough. So now we took it to Hollywood. So those things were happening here, but it's all about visibility, too, because
right.
if no one knows you're doing it, then it doesn't really count to some degree, right? You get God points, but you don't get credit from the rest of the world.
Right.
So now we have an award show, ABFF Honors. This fall, we're launching a tour called ABFF Encore. And we're going to take small versions of the festival and take them around to cities around the country mm-hmm. and bring the knowledge to different communities. Because the reality is, everyone can't afford to come to Miami Beach
right.
for 5 days and
yep.
hotels and airfare and the whole thing. So big mission, man. We just launched a films division, ABFF Films. Did a deal with a company called Lightbox, and they're a feature documentary company. They did the documentary called Man on the Wire that won an Oscar a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. You might have seen that. Lightbox and National Geographic. So we're going to be making big budget feature documentary films this year. So we got a whole new plan about it. And like I said, the comparison is to Motown. We want to be the film version of Motown and leave a legacy of helping people make money, be successful in this business.
All right, folks, we'll have more from the American Black Film Festival right here on TV One in the coming weeks. Also next, we'll talk about World Sickle Cell Awareness Day and what St. Jude Children's Research Hospital is doing to trying to find a cure for sickle cell. Next, News 1 on TV One.
Your centerpiece for black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
Folks, it is World Sickle Cell Awareness Day. It primarily affects African Americans. 1 in 3 African American babies, they are born with a sickle cell trait, while 1 in every 365 black children born with sickle cell disease. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis has been at the forefront of finding a cure for sickle cell disease. I recently spoke with Richard Sadiak, of course, the president and CEO of the fundraising arm for St. Jude.
Most people think of St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and they immediately think of childhood cancer. Well, the fact is, the very first grant that St. Jude Children's Research Hospital ever received was for sickle cell disease. So we've been involved with sickle cell disease even before St. Jude Children's Research Hospital officially opened in 1962. We've continued to research that disease today, and we have one of the largest sickle cell programs for kids in America.
And I know the Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, they've been also involved in trying to do some research on this as well, trying to find a cure. And for the longest, I mean, as a kid, when they had, it used to have a national telethon for sickle cell, and my parents, my brothers and sister and I, we raised money for that, so I've been very well aware of sickle cell. And it's one of those things that, for a lot of people, they just don't know about and doesn't get lots of attention, especially from funders and other researchers.
That's exactly right. I mean, it is predominantly in the African-American community. It's a shame that people don't talk about it. We talk about it all the time here at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. And you know, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital was the first institution that found a cure for sickle cell disease by using a bone marrow transplant. It was almost coincidence, because it happened while we were treating a childhood cancer patient, and that child ultimately recovered not only from the cancer but also from sickle cell disease by using a bone marrow transplant.
So what are you now doing around World Sickle Cell Day?
Well, World Sickle Cell Day is a day to create awareness around the globe about this disease. And, you know, here at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we want the world to know that this continues to ravage the African-American community. We also are starting a couple of different initiatives. So, first of all, we were able to prove here that a drug that was used with adults, hydroxyurea, was okay to use on kids. And this has helped our kids battle sickle cell disease exponentially. But what we also now want to do is we want to expand our study. So you all know that we are the national institution that focuses on childhood cancer survivors. We want to do the exact same thing for sickle cell disease. We want to understand why the average life expectancy for an adult with sickle cell is shy of 50 years of age, okay? We know these kids do very, very well. So what we want to do is follow them not only through their childhood but into adulthood and try to understand what's causing kids that become adults to ultimately not fare well in adulthood. This is very similar to what we've done with our pediatric cancer survivor program. So we're hoping and praying that we're going to learn more about, you know, whether it's just not getting follow-up care or what the cause is, and then eradicate that and make African Americans and anybody afflicted with sickle cell disease live out a full lifespan.
Go to our panel here. Is it very interesting when you talk about sickle cell does not get significant attention whatsoever. As Richard Shadyac said, the amount of research, I mean, not even close. And it's a disease that, frankly, a lot of African Americans should be pushing more. There used to be, as I said in my interview with him, there used to be a national telethon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as a kid in the 70s and 80s, we were involved with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's sad, because it's one of those things where, except for St. Jude's, I don't really know anyone that's paying significant attention.
Children's Hospital of Philadelphia.
At Philly.
They have a doctor there who's also found a cure. They're trying to raise additional funds for that to be actually tested even more so.
You know, this is one of those issues where, we as a community could do a lot of good coming together and actually pushing our own resources to the issue, pushing our resources to finding a cure. We can't expect, our diseases, these are specific to African Americans. Sickle cell, when you have something that's affecting one of three black kids, and I believe it was 100 black kids are actually born with the actual disease, it's a black issue. And it's going to be something that requires, black donors to, raise black money, black dollars to conduct research to, better black community.
Real quick, Dr. Yvonne Carroll, Director of Hematology at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Dr. Carroll, in terms of the public, what is needed? What is needed? I know what St. Jude is doing, but what do you want black folks to do?
I think more awareness is always needed for the disease. It's a disease that worldwide millions of people are affected with sickle cell disease. And in the United States, only one drug, hydroxyurea, is FDA approved for the disease. And we at St. Jude are trying, that drug is only approved in adults. So we're working really hard to pioneer and get it FDA approved in children, and doing research, the studies that need to be done. But everybody needs to be aware that this is a disease that has got to come to the forefront. We have to have more awareness. And I think 20 years ago, we had more awareness, but once we had newborn screening and it was diagnosed in birth, then people became complacent. And I think we need more research. We're working really hard at St. Jude. We have several labs that are doing research. We have clinical research. But the community as a whole needs to come out and make sure that everybody is aware of this disease and money is directed at this disease the same way as it is directed at other diseases in this country.
All right, Dr. Cal, we appreciate that. We're out of time. We have some technical issues there, but we thank you for joining us. We'll be back in 60 seconds. News 1 9 TV.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Birthday shout-out time. Actor Bumper Robinson, known for his role on Different World and The Game, turns 43. I have no idea. Zoe Saldana turns 39. Choreographer and singer Paul Abdul turns 55. Actress Felicia Rashad, Jack Yates High School in Houston, turns 69. Shelly, do you have my iPad? Do you see it now? Also, so Saturday, thank you. All right, so this is us in Miami. Saturday was the birthday of our executive producer, Susan Henry. She does not want me to tell y'all she turned 47. So I'm not gonna tell you she turned 47 on Saturday. But so that was us eating at a Prime 112 in Miami. All right, y'all, I got to go. My sister Kenya, happy birthday.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.